talk about the map that you just made reference to. This was your project as civic poet, a poetic map of Seattle. Talk about how you got the idea for it and maybe some of the cool things that came out of that.
Well, the idea came before I applied for the position because I thought you should submit a project that you want to do. And I sat and thought, what could that project be? And then it just dawned on me for various reasons. One of them, because I'm interested in place and what place tell, you know, what we tell about the place in which we live. And I thought this position was one where that engaged with the city. But in order to engage with it, you really have to understand the power structure of the city. And you have to understand how that structure then plays out in the geography of the city itself. And what better way than then looking at it on a map? Because a map is a flat terrain. Everybody's equal on a map. You can't see the topography of it, you know? The map is flat, so everybody exists on the same plane. And then, so that I like that idea of starting from kind of a flat surface. And then I thought, I was very curious to see if I collected poems from different parts of the city, from Lake City, from Rainier Beach, you know, from West Seattle. What sort of poems would I be getting? And what would that tell us about the city? I mean, it was like a little experiment. And so it was clear to me that the poems needed to be about place, about specific locations, because I wanted the map to talk back to us. It was. And then the other concomitant there, when I thought about it, was that the reason why we're having all these changes in Seattle is because of this high-tech industry. And I really felt that a digital map would occupy space in the space where, you know, that we, some of us perhaps are not welcome or don't navigate as easily. So it was important for me to claim a space in that arena, in the digital world.
In the realm governed by our new overlords.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Even if it's little, even if it's a small space, I felt that it was really important to have that. And once I saw it, I mean, I was sitting on there was another chair there and I was sitting there thinking, and then the idea came into my head and I told my husband, Sean, I just thought of this idea. What if you have a map and you have these poems of place and you have this, I mean, exactly as it looks now. Mm-hmm. And he said, that's it. That's a brilliant idea. That's a great idea. And so it took me more than a year to be able to
make it happen,
mm-hmm. to actually be en route to doing it because we unveiled it toward the end of my term. Right. But it took some time. But I was very happy to do it because in the end, it looks like I imagined it when I first thought of it.
What did you learn from it? You said it was an experiment.
Yeah. It was, what did I learn from it? I learned that, you know, one of the main things that I learned is how much people love green spaces in Seattle. That was a total surprise. I mean, I knew there were going to be poems about gentrification. And I knew there had to be poems about homelessness because these are huge issues for us. And that was true. And the poems about homelessness and displacement, there's a varied note there of people remembering back when they were children, you know, in the CD, to people who just arrived in the city and... I mean, there's one poem there by a guy who walked into one of my workshops at the public library at the Central, and he just saw poetry workshop fourth floor, whatever, and he just showed up. And he had come the day before to Seattle. And this was like the third time I was there or something like that, and he felt very much like he needed to leave. And I said, no, stay, you know, right. You have something to say. You could tell us what you have noticed. And he ended up writing this very short poem about the tents, about the homeless tents. And I ended up leaving the poem. I put the poem in the map because I thought, I mean, I know all the stories behind the poems, but this was like, here's a person who just arrived. And he's writing about the sound and the homeless tents. And that is his impression of Seattle.
First impression.
First impression, fresh. I mean, just arriving. And so I was not surprised about that. I was surprised about the number of people who chose to place poems in parks, who chose to write about trees. And these were not just the class and background of the writers is very varied. I was just surprised about that, you mm-hmm. know? Poems in Spanish about parks. Poems of people who've lived here a long time who remember being at a park. I think it tells us something about what we feel about living here in this beautiful place, you know? And how important open space is for people, you know? Even though we're surrounded by it, we still cherish it very much.
Well, that open space that is close to our house, we develop an affinity for because we go to it more often than not. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it be Seward Park, you know, where I was living, Seward Park you could walk to.
Yeah.
And now it's more Pritchard Island, the Pritchard Reserve, and Dead Horse Canyon, which nobody knows about.
Oh, I have never heard of
it's
that.
It's like stepping into it's like stepping into wilderness.
What is the name of that?
Dead Horse Canyon. You turn right at the pizza place. You go. Yeah. There's a place to park, and you go through, and it's a home of one of two perennial creeks in Seattle.
So it's to the behind the pizza place.
If you're going south, you turn right, you go up the hill, no sidewalks on that street, you go up about two blocks, and then you see the little sign, and you park there, and you walk in, and it's amazing.
Got it. I'm going to go.
Ravine, you know, creek, Taylor Creek going through.
That little pizza place is one of my favorite places in the city.
Yeah.
I like that little pizza place.
Well, we walk up and down that now all the time now because we're living in Rainier Beach, so.
Yeah.
You mentioned you get a sense of the city's power structure, you know?
Yeah.
Tell us.
Yeah.
And you were the civic poet when the whole Ed Murray resignation and the accusations came up.
Yeah.
And
yeah. I mean, by that I mean that you have to, it's very clear where there is affluence in Seattle and where there is not. And for the most part, I would say, Seattle is a very affluent city. I mean, it is, you know.
Ninth richest city in the world.
Is that right?
Ninth. That's what I heard.
I did not know that. But it's just clear walking around, you know, that there's a lot of affluence here. But there's some pockets that are more affluent than others. And there's, you know, just the way, for instance, the way South Park looks. What sort of investment is in South Park? Who lives in South Park? I love living near South Park. The library down there is an amazing library because it goes beyond the borders of a library. It's really a community center, and the librarians at that branch are really very committed and understand something about the power of a safe haven mm-hmm. for kids and people, and their programming reflects who lives there, and they really go out of their way. So there is a strong sense of community there, which you may not think there is because it's pretty bleak when you go down there. But so, I mean, just walking around the different pockets of the city, very few people know that South Park is even on the map. I mean, some places aren't even on the map. And Lake City, too. I mean, Lake City is a very interesting part of town. But, you know, these are pockets with immigrant community. Rainier Beach, too. I mean, you go down there, there's a great poem placed on Rainier Beach by a person who's lived there, Irene Yan, whose poem, she had a poem about an old supermarket that was there and just all the folks that she met there and the men that would flirt with her. And, you know, it was just very interesting. And then that was a new supermarket came where it was a lot orderly, but less people went to it. And so this sense of connection and just human interaction sort of starts falling apart. So that's what I mean by the power structure. Where do poor people live and where do wealthier people live? And how is it that some people are marginalized into some areas? And it was really important for me to work with those people and to have them on the map because I think I've said even myself, when we came to the U.S., we weren't even on the map. So there are people who are not even on the map, not at the edges of the map, not on the map at all.
Nada.
And so I don't think it takes a long time to figure that out, you know? I think Seattle is lucky in that it has enough tax revenue from all the hotels and everything to put back into the arts. So there's an art world here that supports some of us who do that work. I don't think that exists. I've never seen it in other places. And also, you know, green space. I think it's very interesting that the city still has money to maintain green spaces, because that goes a long way for people's sanity.
We just came back from Canada, and a guy who once lived in Seattle has lived in Canada for 40, going on 50 years. He said when he comes to visit us, he wants Mexican food, and we're bringing him to South Park. That's the place where we bring people. Yeah. Who won?
Yeah.
Authentic
Mexican
food.
The restaurants.
Isn't it Muy Macho? Is that the name of the place?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of them.
Yeah.
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 Did you have a hand in selecting Anastasia Renee?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, at first, you know, they asked me to sit on the committee, and I thought, no, I don't want to do that because I know a lot of poets in the city, and I don't want it to be seen as nepotism of some kind. But in the end, I thought about it and I thought, well, I'm the only person who's done this work, who sort of understands what it asks of you, because it's really a position of service. You really have to go in understanding that, just like the poet laureate position. I mean, it is a position of service. It's an honor, but it's a position of service, you know? And then I thought it would be good to be there as a sounding board for the folks who were coming in. If they had questions, then I could be there and answer questions, and they could decide whether they wanted the job or not. So in the end, I agreed to be in the panel, but I had a non-voting, I was a non-voting member of the panel. So I sat through the interviews and I did answer questions. So people had questions and I clarified things for the committee that was doing the selection, and then they voted at the end.